Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:03 p.m. that is Pacific Summertime. Today is March 21st. Well, the yield curve spread has been contracting since the beginning of March, and it is now approaching the lower side of the most recent range, which has been persisting since the beginning of December. It's already at very narrow levels at only 11 basis points right now, or just a shade under 12, to tell the truth. If we go back and look at some back history, well, we can see that it has compressed considerably over the course of the last 6 or 7 years. There was a time back in 2010-11 where it was a lot closer to 300 basis points versus the just less than 12 basis points we have today. That's a reflective of the fact that the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates, that they have been, and that there is some pricing going on in terms of the bond market as to just how much further that could possibly have gone, and what kind of effect that is having on the wider economy, not just in the USA, but globally. We also have to remember that because of extraordinary monetary policy, then this has acted as an addictive quality for investors. There has obviously been a lot of risk-taking because of extremely low interest rates and massive availability of credit. That is most particularly true in the corporate sector and in the sovereign sector. In the USA, the consumer has deleveraged largely because they weren't able to get leverage in the aftermath of the financial crisis because banks weren't lending. So the fact that the yield curve spread is really only a shade above zero, that should be giving us at least some pause to think about what the outlook for the next potential recession is. One thing we know from history, at least, is that this is one of the most reliable lead indicators for a future recession. When the spread goes negative, it gives us a lead indicator for the next recession for anything from 6 to 18 months hence. I don't think it's beyond the bounds of possibility that if we're thinking about 18 months hence, that's the next presidential election. And there is a very, I think, considerable risk that there is going to be a progressive candidate who is going to win the election, and that the stock market could quite easily have a cardiac arrest in the event that there are going to be substantially higher taxes announced, and that anything approaching the new Green Deal that was put together over the space of a weekend could be implemented. So that's what we have potentially got to look forward to 18 months from now. But the yield curve spread is not inverted yet. One thing we also know from history is that when it does become inverted, it's usually the case that the stock market can continue to rally for months afterwards. And when we look at what's going on in terms of the stock market, well, the S&P 500 was up 1% in here today. That has confirmed support in the region of this 2800 point level. It has emphatically broken through that level now, having had a mild consolidation just below it. And this is really quite an impressive rebound. Well, the peak back in September is really not all that far away. And considering that we have just had a little consolidation, then I think there's quite a strong likelihood that we're going to get back up and test that level. I think it's also worth considering that all of this range that's been persisting over the last 15 months has been occurring below the big psychological 3000 level. And it's not, I think, particularly surprising that we do get these lengthier periods of consolidation in the region of big round numbers. We certainly had a lengthy consolidation around 2000 back in 2015 and 2016. The very big question now is, by announcing a pause and by announcing the end of the impending end of the reduction in the size of the balance sheet, has the Federal Reserve done enough to defray the potential for a recession to evolve within the next 18 months? That is the big question that investors are asking, most particularly at the shorter end of the curve. Because when we look at the 2 year, then it's testing the upper side of the range that's been in evidence since January, but this doesn't look like anything other than a first step above the type 2 bottom. And considering how persistent and consistent the decline was in the 2 year future, particularly in 2018, this is a very meaningful change. And a sustained move below 106 would be required to really question that this isn't a clear change of trend. The other, I think, rather important technical point that's worth paying attention to is the fact that we very clearly had a failed upside break above 3% on the 10-year Treasury. The dynamic of the failure was larger than the dynamic of the breakdown, so that's a clear signal. Now we have seen it come back to test this 2.5% level. 2.5% had been a previous area of resistance for yields on the way up, particularly during 2017. So it's a potential area where we could see some support coming in on the chart or some selling pressure starting to arise as a result of the future getting up to these levels. But if the yield contracts below 2.5%, well, then that is going to clearly erode a potential area of resistance, and it holds out the prospect that with a failed upside break, that the yield could go back down and test the lower side of the range. So that's certainly a potential outcome that in the event that we do get a recession at some point in the next 18 months, that's a really quite, I think, a likely scenario in terms of government bond yields. That's completely beside, runs in the face of the fact that there is a massive quantity of additional debt that needs to be refinanced. In fact, it couldn't potentially happen at a better time for the government if there's going to be a lot of investment demand for treasuries. Well, the other, so that's certainly a potential outcome. But when we also think about the fact that the stock market is rallying, well, generally stocks are rallying because of this very clear conclusion that the risk from higher interest rates has been removed. Amazon was up $24 in here today, but it has been up on consecutive days this week, and that is a very clear and standout upward dynamic following through on the impressive performance put in last week. It has now very clearly broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and this greatly increases the potential that it is going to go right back up and test the big psychological 2000 level. And Google has also, and sorry, I can't type, not typing particularly well here. Google has also been firming from above the psychological $1,000 area, and it was up in dynamic manner last year, last week, and again this week, and now it's back above $1,200. So this has been a very emphatic rebound. So when we think about the fact that these are some of the largest companies in the world, well then, that is at least holding out the prospect that investors are starting to move back into interest in these big companies. So Microsoft has broken out now to new all-time highs, and this is, I think, a very significant development. When we think about that, the fact that the share today is multiples of where the peak was back in 2000, that by adopting the subscription business model, the streamlining of cash flows for the company has been incredibly impressive. Well, again, these are some of the largest companies in the world, and they're helping to cement the return of risk appetite among investors. Apple has now cruised through the 200-day moving average. Now, I do think that it's less likely that Apple is going to be leading on the way up here. I think it's much more likely we're going to be in for a period of ranging, but it does look like 150 is a very significant area of support. The other, I think, rather important point in here today was the strength of the dollar. Logically, by standing pat on interest rates and by stopping reducing the size of the balance sheet, that removes a tailwind from the dollar. But the dollar was really quite firm in here today. So that has to therefore be there has to be another reason why it was strong. One of those could potentially be that investors are concluding that at least for the moment, the USA has still got higher interest rates than just about anywhere else, and that their economies are in a worse state than the USA's is. So therefore, they are more likely to introduce even more easing than the USA is. So that's a potential reason why the dollar should rally. But if they do introduce easing, most particularly in Europe, then that's likely to be a real stimulative action for the stock market. And that should help to put some favor back into the appetite of global investors for European assets. So the Euro Stoxx index is firming from above the trend mean. This is far from a consistent trend, but it is moving higher. And it has at least held the medium-term sequence of higher major reaction lows. So that is certainly the most recent of those is an important touchstone in the ability of the market to continue to push higher from here. That's the Euro Stoxx. I think it's also worth taking a look at the longer-term Europe stocks because it has been ranging mostly between 350 and 400 for nearly 4 years, and that is the upper side of an awfully long range. So what that is holding out the prospect of is that if the euro does start to do better, that is going to bolster the attraction of European assets, and most particularly some of the domestic plays, where there has been no growth priced in at all. But Europe's growth is going to be, on the one hand, pinned to the fact that valuations are reasonably attractive and that there is little prospect of the ECB raising rates, but also then from for the outlook for China, considering that China is a much bigger market for European exports than is the USA. The A-share index was up over 11 in here today. This doesn't look like anything other than a short-term consolidation within a recovery scenario. Bull markets in China are state-sponsored. I feel like I'm going to be saying that on every broadcast for the foreseeable future, because when you do get state sponsorship in China, it encourages the vast numbers of retail investors to become active in the market. That represents a massive slug of additional capital hitting the market. And we have had that green light from regulators and from the central government, where they have said that they need capital markets and banks to start extending credit again. Well, that was anathema over the course of the last few years for the simple reason that they were trying to stamp out the shadow banking sector. Well, that's already been accomplished. So they do have room now for fiscal stimulus and more credit availability. What's interesting is that China has said clearly that they're not going to engage in quantitative easing on this occasion, but that is more of a swipe against the actions that we've had from other central banks rather than the fact that China is more than capable and I think really quite likely to engage in stimulus. Then, when we look at what's going on in India, well, their central bank has cut interest rates, And they have their election coming up. There is approximately 35% of the global population are going to be voting in elections this year. So that does hold out the prospect for some significant change. I think it's a clear conclusion if we look at results over the last decade that the market clearly favors right-wing populists over left-wing populists. And of course, the USA had our US voters had our investors had perhaps pay attention to that, because if a left-wing populist is elected in the USA, then that is not going to be good news for markets. But that is also a year and a half from where we are today. Now, when we look at the commodity complex, well, gold prices were a little softer in here today, and the strength of the dollar is certainly a good reason for that, but it was off the lows, and it has continued to hold this very short-term sequence of higher reaction lows as it builds support above the region of the trend mean. And silver prices have also been reasonably steady, but they were not quite able to hold on to their advance in here today. So the strength of the dollar is weighing on some of these current of these commodities. The Mexican peso, having broken out yesterday, was a little softer in here today. The South African rand, which had been easing back yesterday, did not rally in here today. Or excuse me, it's the other way around. The dollar had pulled back yesterday, and it did not rally in here today. There is clearly this sequence of lower rally highs. This is a meaningful area of potential resistance for the dollar. Then the Japanese yen has also been a little stronger in here recently, considering that well, yesterday, and didn't quite hold on to all of the gain in here today. This is a potential area where we could anticipate the Bank of Japan starting to weaken the currency again. The last thing they want is to see another flash rally like we saw back at the beginning of this year. The fact that stock markets generally are looking quite firm should be positive for the Nikkei. But we won't be able to really sound the all clear on the Japanese market until the second section is pushing back above that 7,000 area, and it hasn't quite been able to do that just yet. Then, when we look at Australia, well, the Australian dollar has continued to hold around the 70-cent level, and we've had a pause in the ASX 200. There is certainly a short-term overbought condition, and not least as it is testing its highs from the third quarter of last year. So we do have room for consolidation. I think the one important point here with a number of markets is the performance of their respective banking industries. The Australian banks have paused in the region of the trend mean and continue to hold a more than 2-year sequence of lower rally highs. The S&P 500 banks index, well, if they're not going to have the central bank raising rates, well, that is going to compress margins, and it has been down in a rather dynamic manner over the last 3 days. Now, if this holds the decline through the end of trading tomorrow, then that is a downside key reversal. And from the region of the trend mean, it would suggest that we're going to get some additional downside selling pressure. And the underperformance of the banking sector, particularly over the course of the last year, well, that is reflective of tightening credit conditions. So that's, I think, an important characteristic. The one other thing that I find somewhat worrying, but we're certainly going to find out in the next 6 or 7 weeks, is the fact that some of these very large unicorn type companies are now moving towards listing on the public markets. At the same time, we're seeing that, like, for example, I saw an article today, it was that Switzerland's richest man is paying a 46% premium to take a company private. that private equity companies have got $2 trillion in assets just sitting on the sidelines waiting for opportunities. There isn't really a hurry on private companies to go public. And when they do seem to be in a hurry to go public, well, then that really does mean that we should be asking questions as to why now. Well, Uber and Lyft are very unlikely to ever be able to make money in the absence of autonomous vehicles. Their biggest challenge is that they are the least likely to actually come up with autonomous vehicles. Google has got a very clear lead in that regard. So this is going to represent a significant slug of additional supply hitting the market, and that's probably less likely to be of a very significant factor. But in the event that we eventually see one of these companies going bust, well, then that's going to represent a significant hit to employment. You can't have a recession without unemployment starting to rise. And the jobless claims tend to be really very volatile and subject to false breaks. The bulls will certainly be hoping that it compresses again and goes right back below the 200,000 jobs level. On the other hand, this is worth watching because if it breaks its sequence of lower rally highs and pushes up and through the 250,000 jobs level, then that is going to be a potential headwind because it could be a lead on the wider unemployment figures, which have been trending down now for a really very significant period. So these are some of the things to pay attention to. The one thing that we know is that when the Fed in particular stops raising interest rates and goes on pause, that generally is seen as a positive by stock market investors, and they can push the indices up into new high ground. It's when the central bank eventually cuts interest rates is usually when stock market investors take fright. So that's something that I think is worth bearing in mind, that we do have the potential here that stock markets are going to do better from here. All the indications that we're seeing in terms of performance on Wall Street and other indices is very supportive of that view. The bond market is pricing in the potential for an interest rate cut, and the yield curve spread is getting progressively narrower, so that is pricing in the fact that the bond markets are not happy with the liquidity tightening. The underperformance of banks is obviously something that we need to pay attention to. These are all pointing to the fact that we're late in the cycle, but we're not quite at the end of the cycle. The first interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve would be a very clear signal that we are at the end. So I think that is something that we need to pay attention to, and that if at this stage in the cycle trends are losing consistency after the rallies that we've had, well then that is, I think, a time when having stops is going to be an advantageous time. The one lesson that people will have learned from the big drawdown that we had in the fourth quarter and the subsequent rally was that stops didn't work. So they are less likely to have stops today than they would have had back, or they would have been back in the third and fourth quarters. Unfortunately, this is exactly when you need to have a stop. It's because having had the big shock, then it's going to be, if we do move into a more volatile period now, particularly against a background where we are late in the cycle, then that is quite likely to be top formation development. So I think that is the biggest takeaway, that there is potential for additional upside here, but this is not the time to be tolerant of increasing volatility. And I think with that, I will leave you for today. I'm heading to Florida on the red eye this evening and speaking at the the AAPTA, the American Association of Professional Technical Analysts, tomorrow. I'm busy putting the presentation together. What I propose for tomorrow's big picture long-term audio and video is that I'll just do the presentation again. I've got a lot of charts in the slide deck with some very interesting graphics. So I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.